Okay, you're good.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. One person. If we could take the roll, please.
Sure. Commissioner Briceño?
Present.
Commissioner Buck?
Here.
Commissioner Duran?
Here.
Commissioner Leach?
Here.
Commissioner Lee? Commissioner Matsuba?
Here.
Commissioner Shader? Commissioner Steinberg? And Commissioner Wang?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll come back to that. We have something we'd like to vote on, and we'll come to that in the calendar.
Item five.
Oh, yeah.
Item five is a review, discuss, and vote on 2023 commission meeting calendar proposal.
So, Commissioner Steinberg isn't here, but Commissioner Buck.
Yeah. So, thank you. Do we need the mic?
You can use it if you want. You have to turn it on first, though.
I don't think you need it.
Yeah, if you don't need it.
I've got that Detroit voice, so. good morning, and it's so good to be with you all. And being here today is actually part of this proposal. So what we are proposing is to have three meetings that will be in different places in the community, all in county buildings, and then the remainder being here. The idea of going into the community is really hearing what's been said. Ever since we've been remote, we've had a greater opportunity for public comment. So that's why Rabbi and I have proposed a couple of locations that are in the community that are still TBA. They will be in county buildings with access to parking. And I think that's my summary.
Yeah, I actually do want to share an update around the county building situation.
Okay.
And when the proposal was reviewed, I learned that there aren't county buildings except for maybe libraries in South County or some of these locations. So we kind of took out the county building out of the proposal.
Okay.
But what that means is, the commission would have to give commission staff the directive to partner with a local entity in that area to host the commission meeting and then hold the listening session for that organization. We do have to get approval from the county because there will be some Brown Act and guidelines and ADA rules that need to be met because it is going to be a public meeting. So, not to say that it won't happen outside, but it changes in terms of we would have to find the location ourselves free. So there couldn't be a cost to it.
Are there other commissions that meet, for example, in the county? Where do they meet?
Usually they have libraries. So it has to be within, of course, there's always, it has to be within the business hours because the clerk of the board is the one that keeps our minutes and they can't get paid overtime. So it has to be during business hours. And if libraries is a place, but libraries, I mean, can it be conducive for a meeting? I'm not sure if that's what the commission wants to do. My interpretation of meeting outside was to connect with community orgs.
Exactly.
And other communities and provide the space for the commission to hold hearings for those. And I think that not only myself, but other members of the commission, we have a broad enough network to be able to tap on different orgs and friends to host us and then hold that space for the community.
And I think, you know, there's enough time, right? Because, like, our first one is in March in 2 months. So, you know, we have approximately 60 days to identify something. That's plenty of time within the requirements of the Brown Act and everything else. So I know I took on with Rabbi Steinberg like the task of figuring this out, so I would be happy to help to identify with other people if they're interested, like some places in the community that meet all the requirements.
So I love the concept of meeting, you know, in the community, and I understand that we might have some difficulties getting there. I think it's only worthwhile if we have a very a very direct plan, because bringing people to make comments, as you know, is not, we always get the same folks, right? And so it will be an extra responsibility to say, hey, we can meet in this particular space, but it'll be worthwhile if we have 20 people show up. And having that responsibility of turning people out of the community is definitely not an easy task. On top of the commissioners having that responsibility, you know, do we have a plan for staff to help reach out into the community? And for me, reaching out to the community is not sending an email, but it's making that one-on-one connection with folks to get them there. So I'd like to see a concrete plan that, you know, has goals about how many people we're reaching out to and how we're doing that, and an organizing plan if we're going to meet outside of this.
So can I add, I think that's a great point, because that was my question to the commission. In this proposal, we have March, June, and am I missing one? Oh, and October as the outside dates for meetings. In the past, the commission would say, you know, we'd love to hear from the X community. Can we connect with an organization that directly works with them or has it? My ask was, is there specific communities that you want to hear from? Because then that helps staff, helps me figure out who I need to connect to and start talking to host us in their space.
I had a question as well, and I'm not trying to stir things up when I ask it, but it's just out of my own personal needs, and to Commissioner Briseño's point, if we're inviting more people in. While this is a lovely facility, I am wondering if there is another county location that doesn't have the problems with traffic, dead ends, parking. You know, I don't know how long all this is going on, but if we're inviting people to get here, or for our own selves, I mean, I left well before an hour of, you know, to get here. And, you know, I'm in the Rancho Santa Margarita area. So I'm just wondering, is there another facility that might also not, and the cost of parking is not that much, but still, if you're inviting guests so that they don't have to pay and that type of thing. I don't know what exists, to be perfectly honest.
I know of one space, but it's because of where we were before we moved, and that's the grand location. That's where our offices were before, and the county offered the space there for the commission to meet before we got moved. But I'm not sure about what the availability is for that anymore. I don't know if Ted or James have any.
I'd like to actually add one more thing to consider as we're talking about our meetings. And I'm going to have to go quickly, so I just want to make sure that I leave you with this in case we don't come up with a conclusion. But that there's always a virtual way for the public to hear what we're doing. So there's some disappointment about not being able to be to give remarks today or to give their comments today. So if whatever we're doing, if we can incorporate the virtual, virtual way to call in or to Zoom in to see us and talk to us, would be great.
And that was something I also wanted to bring up. I did hear from Felicity, and she was saying, oh, I didn't see how I can connect. But that was what we had talked about before, is it would involve us saying, was that when it involved us giving, oh, that was if we were outside of the space. But if they want to call in, can we make that possible without it?
That's a good question. I don't know if that's a possibility.
Like the way the Board of Supervisors, they have comments that come through virtually, calls that come in.
I did inquire if that was possible to do like a Zoom in this room, and I was told that it is.
Okay.
I don't know all the technicalities of it, but it is something that probably could be done from this room. It has the capabilities.
So, meaning that public comments can be...
They can observe virtually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
James. See, Norma, if you might be well, the Board of Supervisors does meet, I think, Jamie can speak to this one, they have only in-person commentary. If people do make comments ahead of the board meeting, they are presented to the members of the commission, so they can make comments to the commission without actually, or the board without actually being present. That's obviously one opportunity as well.
Yeah,
and there's additional notice and requirements associated with virtual participation, which we can go take a look at as well.
I think it's important because we do have those who would not be able to travel to the different locations, but they really would like to be a part of our meetings and know what's going on and make comments, keep us abreast of what things that we don't know about. So, okay. But as far as the locations that you were saying, South Orange.
So, I mean, I think what's being proposed is for the calendar that was that's in the packet to be approved for 2023. The three locations, and I would need to get a directive from the commission to say these are the communities that we want to connect with, and you know it'll be up to me to figure out work with some of you or my staff, whatever, to be able to see who will be able to host us at these three locations and do my due diligence with James and Ted to get approvals from the county to ensure that we're meeting all the requirements.
And so when we put those locations, two things. One is I had looked at a listing of all the county buildings, and so that's kind of one of the things that Commissioner Steinberg and I were thinking about. And I wasn't, when we talked about it, we weren't talking quite as much about populations is just geographic access, because I knew once we came back here, after having worked here for like a long time, it's not easy to come here, right? And so we were going to lose that part. And so that's why, like being a South County resident myself, very little comes to South County. And, you know, we treat South County like it's going to San Diego, right? Anything south of the San Diego. And so I would love to see something in my own community. And then, so that's kind of what we were thinking, is something coastal, and then something north, and then something south. And so I don't know if, like, even in the social services agency buildings, if there's conference rooms. I looked at where they had satellite locations as well. There's probation in Orange County. So, like, I don't know if any of those could be considered, but that's kind of what I was looking at the time. But speaking for just Commissioner Steinberg and myself, we didn't have any particular population, but like all of the people, because we serve, you know, all of our communities.
Well, as far as the populations, Norma, I mean, I agree. I think wherever we decide to have it, we can kind of target a few populations and a few communities in that area.
It's more of the inviting guests, right, to come and speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that they have a location that's available if we can't find a county location. I think what's important is that we're not hanging our hat that it's going to be a county building, because we're not sure that these spaces have that.
The only reason why we said county building was I read in the bylaws that it had to be at a county building.
Yeah, well, and that's what why the revisions came through after, because there were some changes there.
Okay.
So it's just informing that it doesn't have to be at a county building.
Oh, beautiful.
So what you're voting on is we approve this, and then after that, then I'll start working through where we're going to meet.
Only for the three locations, right? What about the other seven, like Dot had suggested?
That's another discussion for the commission, because at this point in this proposal, we have all the other ones here. If the commission wants to change that, then we're going to have to continue this item again and create an ad hoc to figure out what those other locations are going to look like and see if it's going to work, right? And bring it back for a vote next month.
May I ask a question? The location you mentioned, Grand.
It's Grand and Maxine. It's next to the Border Restaurant.
Okay. Is it under the same amount of construction and traffic detours?
I was there 2 days ago. I don't see any construction happening there now.
Okay.
And they still have parking that's free.
I proposed that, but there was a reason why you couldn't go there. Right? I don't remember why.
Yeah. I don't know. So I think.
It's okay. If you guys don't know, then maybe we can go there. Yeah. We need to figure that out. It's okay.
Just not forget the reason. Just show up. But, you know, we also need to be, and I'm just keenly aware of it at the moment,
right.
But, I mean, we need to have handicapped parking for our visitors.
So that parking lot is free. It has handicapped.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's a private building, so it has all the ADA stuff
okay.
there. It's not, I mean, there's some stairs and things like that, but there's an elevator. So I think it has a lot of what...
Mm-hmm.
With some of the restrictions here, but I don't know. I mean, that changes this itself, which tells me that the commission's not going to be able to vote on it today.
And I just spoke with James to clarify the Grand Avenue building. I was told last, and he confirmed it still is. They're doing a lot of renovations. So there's construction going on at the buildings.
At the buildings
themselves.
But that doesn't require us or like prohibit us from using them, right? I mean, the
if they're available. I don't know if they are. And I don't know which buildings. I know there's a set of like three different buildings there. So I don't know which ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then maybe what we need to do is continue the item. Right. And then look into what's available at Grand. And
so who would Ted or James help?
We can partner with you, Norma, to determine if Grand is an opportunity. So
okay.
Just note the management of the commission and the facts of the county transitioned from the Grand facility over to the Hall of Administration side.
Yes.
But we can certainly help connect to see if that might be a resource.
Okay.
And then will you still be able to move forward to figure out the other three locations, even if we don't pass it?
I mean, it's going to come back to that. I'm hearing that there's an agreement there, so we still have to move fast because there's some approvals that I need to get before we announce that that's the space where it's going to be. So I'll go with that.
Thank you.
Okay. So do we need a motion to continue it?
You can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to second the motion to continue the item.
I didn't move, but go for it. I now have. I move to continue the item to next month's agenda.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Cool.
So all in favor? We don't need to do roll call votes anymore.
Aye.
Aye.
And that was the only voting item that
did
get,
correct? No, there was a number two, which was with the, but it's not going to happen because.
Well, I spoke with Rabbi yesterday.
Right, but.
He was wondering because of the correction.
Right, we're
oh,
it's going to get continued. So, you know, the original plan for this was there was a proposal for a revision to the bylaw.
Are we going to go to
what?
Item 6?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Okay, so we can go to item 6. So it's review, discuss, and vote on proposed bylaw changes to be submitted to the Board of Supervisors for consideration.
So the original proposal was to go back and review the bylaws, or they had to review the bylaws. And it was Commissioner Leach and Commissioner Steinberg who met to amend Article 11, Section C. And the amended language would provide clarity that would include language that allows the chairperson to issue statements pertaining to hate incidents, not just hate crimes, when the other parameters of the section are met. So the revisions were finalized, but then it came to my attention there's an additional change that needs to happen to the bylaws that clears the term of service for commissioners when they're appointed by the city selection committee. So that is not in the bylaws currently and needs to be added. So that's the reason why the commission can't vote on it today. We need to take it back. I will need a directive from the chairperson to go back and make those changes and then bring back the bylaws to the commission for a vote next month. So there needs to be a motion to continue it, and unless there's other comments or.
What else? I move to continue item 6.
Second.
Okay. and may I ask very, very quickly the review of the corrections to the article and section C? Have they been reviewed by the commission? I mean, can we assume that that is in order?
Well, that was in the packet, so
yeah.
I would assume that folks read it and it's okay, but the vote doesn't come till next.
Right, I understand that, but I'm just saying there's nothing else we have to change on that while we're changing everything else. I mean, before it comes to a final vote, which is what I'm asking.
Right, so there's only two things that are going to be voted on next month.
Right.
It would be to approve the language correction that allows the chairperson to issue statements for hate incidents and hate crimes, and the addition of the term of service for commissioners who are appointed by the city selection committee. So those are the two changes to the bylaws that will be voted on next month.
Thank you for putting that.
Okay.
Yes. My opening reflection actually is related to my own reflection at the end of the year of 2022. And we went dark in December. And I think that there was something significant that occurred with the county that I actually really want to put on record and reach everybody. So on December 6th, the Board of Supervisors had a meeting. And what they did was they declared racism and equity as a public health crisis. So I want to read the resolution. A resolution of the Board of Supervisors of the County of Orange declaring racism and equity as a public health crisis. Whereas the county is dedicated to improving health and wellness, eliminating health disparities, and achieving health equity for all residents, and whereas national, state, and local COVID-19 data reveal that racial and social inequities have exacerbated during the pandemic by disproportionately impacting Black, Indigenous, Latino, Asian American, and Pacific Islanders, and other communities of color, which further reflects structural and systematic racial inequities and their impacts on the health and well-being of individuals and communities. And whereas systematic racism causes persistent discriminatory policies in housing, education, employment, transportation, and criminal justice. And whereas the county is deeply alarmed by the recent racially motivated attacks and violence on Black, Indigenous, Latino, Asian American, and Pacific Islanders and other communities. And whereas the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and the American Public Health Association have declared that racism constitutes a significant barrier to achieving health equity. And whereas communities of colors are often disproportionately impacted by the negative effects of adverse social determinants of health, such as increased exposure to lead, poor air quality, lack of safe places to walk, bike, or run, and unequal access to safe, stable housing. And whereas the numerous studies have linked racism to negative health outcomes, including research that accumulate experience of racism throughout one's lifetime, can lead to chronic mental health and physical health problems, including depression, anxiety, cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, premature birth, hypertension, and even death. And whereas racism can manifest in different ways, ranging from violent attacks to implicit bias to differential access to resources and opportunities. And whereas racism can operate on systematic, institutional, interpersonal levels, all of which resonate throughout time and across generations. And whereas racism is among the root causes of adverse child experiences, ACEs, and Black, Indigenous, Latino, Asian American, and Pacific Islanders and other communities of color are disproportionately impacted by ACEs due to chronic stress, trauma, and lack of access to support and resources, which has a profound and lasting impact on children, adolescents, and their families. And whereas systematic racism and resulting inequities threaten the health and well-being of Black, Indigenous, Latino, Asian American, and Pacific Islander and other communities of color. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Orange County Board of Supervisors, A, declares that racism with its resultant social and health inequities is a public health crisis affecting our entire society. And B, work to promote an inclusive, well-informed, and racial equity and social-oriented government organization that is conscious of injustice and fairness through robust training and continued education to expand the understanding of how racial discrimination affects individuals and communities most impacted by inequities. And review and assess County of Orange and agency department policies, procedures, and practices to ensure that racial and health equity are core elements of the Orange County's work, and support equity, diversity, and inclusion as a core component to the delivery of health and human services for underserved populations, including appropriate allocations of resources and personnel training, and enhance public education and messaging efforts to increase understanding and awareness of the existence of systematic inequity from a health and human service perspective, with special attention given to the experiences of communities of color, and collaborate with other organizations that are confronting racism, encourage health and racial equity training among all community partners, grantees, vendors, and contractors. Be it further resolved that the Board of Supervisors will work with all county departments and other community partners to assess and apply an equity lens to internal and external policies and practices and adopt preventative measures to fight systematic racism and implicit bias to further health, wellness, and equity in all aspects of community life. So, I bring this up because, again, we went dark in December, and I think that this was a very significant moment within the county because they joined other municipalities to finally declare not only just racism, but inequity as a health crisis, public health crisis. And moving forward, I really hope that we also consider the fact that statements such as this, declarations such as this, it matters. I think that the last year or two, we've made significant changes and decisions in which we've made statements within the county, like things that happen in the county and then beyond. And I want to emphasize that we need to continue to do that. I don't know if you guys watched the supervisor meeting, but I didn't watch it live, but I watched it afterwards. When they were trying to pass this, I think they had almost 20 people go up there for public comment. I think there was only one that actually was supportive of this. There was only one. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, basically, there was a mixed message of, you know, we don't have racism. There is an inequity in Orange County. To accusing this resolution for being what is actually what is not. And at one point, they did invite the Orange County Healthcare Agency Director, Dr. Clayton Chow, to go up and speak. And the public wouldn't let him speak. Mm-hmm. They were heckling him. Mm-hmm. And it's the irony of, well, said that there's no racism, but guess what they were saying? They were telling him to go back to China. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really important to read this and acknowledge the fact that the county is making an effort, and for us, we need to keep pushing this and making sure that that it's at the forefront of what the county is doing. So we're here to do. Okay. Thank you.
I do want to add, thank you, Commissioner Wang, for bringing this up. I think that in our arena of work, we are really focused on tracking, reporting hate activity in Orange County, and that is one symptom of a larger issue. And I feel that this comes in a timely manner, and I truly believe that this commission has a huge role to play here. And I'm hoping that we can continue the conversation around the importance and how this commission's mission aligns with this declaration.
No, I actually want to acknowledge the fact that this was brought forth by the chairman, Doug Chafee of 4th District, and Supervisor Andrew Doe of 1st District, and that it was passed unanimously by the supervisor.
That's great.
First
Fourth.
District and
Fourth. Fourth. Well, thank you, Jennifer. So we're going to move back to the overview, number three, item three.
Okay, so 79 So, I was like, oh, my name is on the agenda. Okay.
What does that mean?
So monthly summary of activities. On the agenda that was mailed to, emailed to us, the contract activity, we have monthly HRC meetings. So we have some goals, and then we have what we have to date. And these are monthly summary activities as of December 2022. For the monthly HRC meetings, the goals for them to be 6, and there's to date 5. The HRC annual report we all saw was completed. The police community reconciliation cases, the goal was 10, there were only 2. Community police meetings, the goal was 2, there was 1. Chiefs advisory boards and sheriff's interfaith council, goal was 4, there were 3. Community outreach and relationship building meetings. The goal was 20. There were 22. So I think that makes up for maybe some other community meetings. The police diverse community dialogues. Goal was 1. There were none. Hate crime report and networking meeting. There was goal was 1. There were 2. Support to hate crime victims. Goal was 4. And there was 80. And so I think that's just... right, what we saw in the annual report, right, the increase of hate crime reporting that happened. Outreach efforts, speeches, presentations, the goal was 5, there was 1. Community training on intergroup relations topics, there was, goal was 2, there was 1. And then the annual awards program and the participating community-based outreach symposiums, the goal was 1 for each, but there were none. From this report, the relationship building and outreach presentations, commission staff attended the building racial equity training by a partner organization. Commission staff also attended an othering and belonging institute training. Hate motivated activities and community conflict and crisis response meetings. Commission staff hosted a retreat for a hate crime prevention network. Commission staff also helped a community partner group to engage in more restorative justice practices for their meetings. That I believe completes the update.
Thank you so much. Norma, any comments or anyone else have any questions about?
No. Well, the one thing I know, the numbers are a little skewed here. And the reason why, even if you look at A, it says six, the goal is 6 meetings. It's because the contract was shortened, so now there will be an updated chart with the full numbers for the 12 months, with the new contract being awarded mid-December. So that's the reason why I was like, well, we hold 12 meetings a month. It was because it was shortened last year, so that's the only reason why the numbers are a little weird.
Moving
on.
Yeah, open forum, and I have no requests to speak.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Item 4 is intro to the Community Conflict Resolution Unit, California Civil Rights Department.
All right, so I'll do the... I have the honor and privilege of presenting our speakers. So we have Marquez, Gregory, and Christina for part of the Civil Rights Department for the state of California. There's a new unit that was formed, and Marquez actually serves on the Cairo board with me, and we thought that this was a good opportunity for the commission to learn of what the California Civil Rights Agency does and what the Community Conflict Resolution Unit is. So in any type of form moving forward, if there's we need to consult, we have questions, that they are a resource to us. So without further ado, hand it over to Marquez.
Thank you, Norma. Commissioners, executive staff, thank you all for having us here. It's a pleasure to be here. It's really an honor. I've been working with Norma over the years, and I've been in Orange County for quite a few years. My name is Marquez Equilibria, with the California Civil Rights Department Community Conflict Resolution Unit. It's a brand new unit that we started in October. So a little bit about myself is I used to be with the Community Relations Service of the U.S. Department of Justice doing community conflict resolution work. And I was based out of Los Angeles, so I did cover Orange County, and I worked in Orange County over the years, various different issues that I worked with and partnered with Orange County Human Relations, and worked with the Anaheim Police Department on a few other issues. And so I'm really happy to be here. I also live in South Orange County, so this is, you know, kind of my backyard. So really, really happy to be here. So I'd like to start off by introducing you to my partners here. This is Greg Mann, who will kick it off. And also, we have the distinct honor and privilege of having our Deputy Director, Becky Monroe, who leads our unit. So she can also share a little bit about herself. So could we just do a quick little mini intros before we get started? Becky, will you say a few words about kind of your background so they could get a flavor of our unit?
Sure. Hi. It's wonderful to be here. I will say I'm particularly excited to be here because I live in Santa Ana. So you've got a strong Orange County representation in the Civil Rights Department, which is a good thing. I've been with the State Civil Rights Department for about a year. Before that, I spent almost all 8 years of the Obama administration working in the administration. I was an appointee to the U.S. Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division. I also was acting director of the Community Relations Service for many years, so that's when I first got to work with Marquez, which was great. And also spent some time at the White House and the Domestic Policy Council working on civil rights policy, so really excited to be here. I was so excited to come to California for a couple of different reasons. my partner is now working at CHOC, so nearby. Mm-hmm. But also because I had been working on federal policy around hate crimes, hate violence, working to build police community relations for so many years, and to come to a state where there's actually an investment and there's a willingness to do that, and then really to come to a county. I will be honest, when I first heard that my partner was looking at CHOC, I said I didn't know a lot about Orange County. I had worked in Los Angeles. I'd been a legal aid lawyer there. And it's just, I mean, to hear when the commissioner was talking about the recent statement about racism as a public health crisis, it is very heartening to know that I'm in a county where there's leadership like this in this room. So very excited to be here. I'm looking forward to talking to you more about the work we're doing with CCRU.
I guess the Los Angeles County resident.
We did. Sorry. He's still a good guy.
Hi, I'm Gregory Mann. I've been with the Civil Rights Department now a little over 13 years. The vast majority of that, over 12 years, was in the legal department doing litigation on civil rights cases on lots of different ones. And I enjoyed that, but after 12 plus years of that and working on really big cases where I didn't think necessarily litigation was the answer. When the Community Conflict Resolution Unit was created, it was very exciting for me to move over here to deal with issues that are better served by ways other than litigation. So mm-hmm. I'm very excited to be a part of the unit with my very new experienced colleagues. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you a little bit now. We have a PowerPoint presentation. The Civil Rights Department, up until just last year, people knew it as the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, or the DFEH. And we were originally created in 1959 to enforce the law. And what folks know us for is that individuals file complaints of discrimination with us, usually in employment and housing, but we do everything. Business, discrimination that takes place in businesses, hate crimes and human trafficking, and I think the legislator recognized how much we did, and that's why our name was changed from Fair Employment and Housing to Civil Rights Department to more accurately reflect what we do. Aside from the investigation of individual complaints, our legal division enforces the law by filing civil complaints, and we do that on behalf of individuals, either as individual complaints, but also class actions as well. In 2013, we had a dispute resolution division that was created that really focuses on mediating and settling those individual complaints that people file. And then we also have a lot of outreach and education that we do these days. mission of the Civil Rights Department is to protect the people of California from unlawful discrimination, basically in all aspects of life. And you saw that a lot of how we do that is through enforcing the law and investigating complaints. Well, the Community Conflict Resolution Unit, what we are, is a little different from that. We're not focused on enforcing the law or bringing complaints or investigating. We're focused on when community conflict arises, bringing people together, conciliating disputes, capacity building for local bodies like yours to deal with these situations. So it's important for folks to know that if you're trying to file a complaint and enforce the law, that's not what we do. That's the rest of the department. We're about trying to bring people together for community disputes, not individual litigation. Even though we were just created last year for the funding, we've had the ability since 1980. The language has been in the statute, and unfortunately we never had the funding. But last year we finally got the funding, and we just started in October, and we're going to be going through at least 2025, but hopefully well beyond. And our jurisdictions, you know, we deal, again, community. You're going to hear a lot about community from us because that's what we're doing, not traditional one-on-one cases, but community conflict. And if a member from the community requests our services or bodies like yours, we can get involved as long as the dispute is a community dispute that threatens peaceful relations among the community. So that's how our jurisdiction is imposed. And I'm going to turn it over to Marquez to talk a little bit more about what we do and who we work with.
Great. So we summarize our services into five areas. The first one is designing conflict resolution systems. So say, you know, there's an act of hate in your community and you don't know what to do, you can call us, we can figure out, like, okay, you want more community input. You want the community to provide some solutions. You want recommendations from the community. So you want to design a process where the community can come to you, can have discussions with you. You want to have a big group discussion, or do you want to have small groups? You're going to need some facilitators. You're going to need to think about all these logistical things. That's where we can come in, help you design that process, help you train some small group facilitators if needed to implement an engagement process with the community. Facilitating community engagement, that means we can also help to facilitate those processes, not just help you with the technical assistance aspect of it, but to also help run meetings and have discussions. There are cases where sometimes the community doesn't trust the locals, the mayor or, you know, the police chief. They need a third party, and the community and the city have decided, you know, could you have the conversation? Could you facilitate it? It says, you know, we'll host it, but, you know, we want you as a third party neutral to facilitate it. So we can do that as well. Education and training. So we're a brand new unit. We're trying to get feedback on what kind of tools to develop for training. That's going to be one of the training products, is going to be one of those things that we hope to provide to different communities to help build capacity, conflict resolution basics, facilitation 101, meetings like mediation 101, how to set up meetings, how to run them, how to engage the community, and implicit bias, unconscious bias, you know, microaggressions, all of those things, how to respond to hate. We hope to have various different training products that are of interest to commissioners like yourselves, as well as to CDOs and other groups that are in a position to also respond to hate and other issues that happen locally. And mediation, of course. There are cases where mediation will be the kind of tool that is requested, you know, between two parties. It could be the county and a group, or, you know, a city and a different group to try and address an issue. And I can give you an example of that in a minute. But technical assistance, as I mentioned, I want to make sure I don't, you know, skip that, because besides helping you with, say, designing a conflict resolution process, it could be something as quick as a 15-minute phone call. where you call us up and you say, something happened in our community, I want some quick feedback, here's what we're thinking about doing, and can you spot any red flags? Are there any further recommendations? So it could be a quick confidential call on, you know, just feedback. And speaking of confidentiality, which we're going to talk about next, so the, some of the standards of practice are that we're, you know, neutral and impartial, so we're not there to take sides. We're not there to side with, you know, government or with, you know, community groups. We are an impartial service. We're also confidential. That means that those conversations that we have with community groups, with you all, they're confidential. We're not going to hand that information off to another part of the civil rights department or another agency, whether it be, you know, local, state, county, federal. We're not going to share information. Otherwise, hey, communities wouldn't trust us. So that information, that conversation that we have with you is confidential. And so we don't conduct investigations. We're not an enforcement unit. We don't arrest people. We don't prosecute people. We do not have law enforcement powers. So who do we work with? Anybody who's a group. So we work with a lot of community groups, nonprofits, CBOs, schools, religious organizations, human relations commissions, law enforcement, tribal groups, elected officials, you know, advocacy groups, universities. So anybody who's a group that, you know, is there to help people, represents people, we can work with. And so in terms of examples, mediating conflict within community groups, I mentioned, you know, one example of, like, mediation that I had, you know, some years ago. It was a tribal group, and the county was citing them for trying to build a spiritual structure, and they were not in compliance with code, so they were being fined and fined constantly. So we had to mediate between the permit office and the tribal group, and eventually we asked, look, if you were them, how would you do this? Because it's very complex. And he said, oh, well, I would file this form, do this, 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 and this. We could have done that. We could have prevented years of conflict by just doing that. And say, okay, so we resolved it. So we can mediate conflict. De-escalating tensions between community groups and law enforcement. As you all know, sometimes there are tensions between law enforcement and the police. It leads to protests and demonstrations. So there are different opportunities that can happen right as an incident happens. Before the press conference, tone setting is very important. There are a lot of things that can happen immediately, and there are long-term opportunities to engage in law enforcement to have discussions about, you know, policing and, you know, how to improve that relationship between the police and the communities they police. Facilitating dialogue between nonprofit organizations, local government. So again, facilitating, you know, sessions with your community. You know, what objectives do you have? What purposes do you have? You were just having a few discussions, right, about the logistics. So those are the kinds of discussions that we might have in providing you with technical assistance and trying to find, you know, locations and have you think about, like, access, how people access. The ability to then have a discussion with you and provide input. But, you know, I mentioned also, you know, if you want to have small groups, bigger groups, you know, what is the purpose? Is it just to receive? Is it like a listening session? Or do you want there also to be more cross conversations between different community groups so that, you know, you have a better so that community groups have exposure between themselves, especially as you have demographical changes. We mentioned that there is, you know, racism in some of our public meetings. Sometimes we have to have more humanity in those opportunities to have, you know, hey, talk to somebody who's very different than you and see how, you know, they're very similar to you in many ways. You have to have an opportunity to have a dialogue. So if that's part of the purpose, if that's part of the objective, we can help to design those and think about the questions that we want to ask, the tasks we want to give small groups of people. Educating human relations commissions about developing inclusive community engagement policies. So, you know, because we're part of the Civil Rights Department, we're very conscious of the types of civil rights laws that people have to comply with. So when we talk about inclusion, well, are you at the very minimum meeting all those compliance things? You know, Norma talked about ADA, you know, county buildings, right? So, you know, when we talk about inclusion, are we at the very, very least complying with all these various laws, right? Providing technical assistance and consultations to schools, educational institutions to address hate. Think about how many people post things online, on social media, text messages, right? We've seen stories in the news about police departments sending text messages that, you know, then you lose trust. But kids posting things online and social media, they say things, creates controversy. So we can assist schools as well. And of course, commissions then also have opportunity to do something, say something about those. We had in a neighboring county, something happened at a school, tortillas were flying, and, you know, there's an opportunity for a commission to say something, right? So there's certainly a lot of opportunities for us to work together and think about us as a resource. What's really great about Orange County is you have a human relations nonprofit that has a lot of resources too. So and I've worked with them before, so it's fantastic that we can all partner together and work together to assist you and figure out like what is the best way to, you know, to provide a force multipliers. So I also want to share with you the other resources that we have at the Civil Rights Department, and for that I'm going to turn it over to Becky Monroe, who's going to talk about some of our other initiatives.
Thank you, Marquez. And I will say, I'll keep this brief because we would love to hear from you. Our goal was to see if we could be a resource for you. You know, we are ready and available. I wanted to point out this, and I also want to be recognize where I am. Orange County has its own resource line through 211, and so our goal would just be simply to supplement that. We also know that there are many counties across the state that aren't that fortunate. So we have, last year, we were... the state legislature asked us to create the first, they said, hate crimes hotline. So we have decided to create, we have created the California versus Hate resource line and network where people can report acts of hate, learn what their options are. So if you are targeted for hate, you can call. We have an 8338 number. We are partnering with 211, so people can call 211 and get the same service, or they can go online. What are your choices if you're targeted for hate? If you don't want to go to law enforcement, what are your options? If you do want to go to law enforcement, what would that process look like? Secondly, can we connect you with culturally competent resources and support? We are working very closely with our state partners at the California Department of Social Services, who have been giving out grants across the state to help fund smaller CBOs so that they can actually provide support to people who are targeted for hate. So they are all part of our network, as is everybody in the 211 network across the state. Our main partner in providing these resources in terms of the person who answers the phone, the person who will actually provide care coordination services to you, is trained through 211. And again, we are language accessible online. We currently have it in 15 languages. That will grow. We can serve people in over 200 languages if they call. And, you know, the people who are answering are trauma-informed agents and care coordinators. So, again, our goal is if you are targeted for hate and you want to know your options and you need help navigating a system that has for too long not been friendly to people who've been targeted for hate, we will help you do that. This is not a call, get your numbers and go away. If you want us to stay with you, we can stay with people through that process. So, and again, I'm, you know, as Marquez said, we're so fortunate because in Orange County, we have the Human Relations Commission, and we have the nonprofit HRC that's doing a lot of this work, and we're excited to partner with them to figure out how we can kind of, you know, even maximize that more. The other thing that happened this year is that the governor appointed and the state legislature appointed several members to a new commission on the state of hate. We are also housing that commission. You know, its purpose is to engage in fact-finding and research on hate activity, collaborate with communities, provide resources and guidance. I've been now, it's almost two decades that I've been working on acts of hate, and it is so exciting to see that there is this kind of investment. But we have so far to go. When we talk about reporting, understanding, we know people don't feel safe reporting. Why don't they feel safe reporting? How do we address that? And one of the things I was talking to, actually, a sociologist at UCI, who's done some research, and she said the number one thing is if people feel comfortable, if there are strong police-community relations, that can help to improve reporting. So that's why the work that you are doing really is so central to not just making sure people report, but making sure people get access to resources and to the support that they need. So we are excited about this commission. We'd love to kind of get your input, because you are, I think Orange County is one of the state's sort of leading counties in terms of doing some of this outreach. I mean, the data you cited where you had the goal of 4 and there were 80, I think the commission can learn from that. So we want to make sure that the commission is also able to learn from you and if they can support the work you're doing. And we'll turn it back to Marquez.
Yeah, so this QR code is for our website. You can also Google us, California Civil Rights Department, and under the dispute resolution, you just click on community conflict resolution, and that will take you to our webpage. But I have a different QR code on your desk, and I want to ask if you will take a quick moment of your time. I have 8 questions for you, and they basically ask you about, you know, your sense of comfort in responding to various different kinds of controversies and human relation issues. And the reason I'm asking is because as we're trying to develop training products, we want to know what is important. What should we focus in on? We want that to be driven by your needs, by whatever you believe also are the human relation issues of most concern. So towards the last two questions are based, like, what is your top human relation issues in this city, in this county? And then the very, very last question is, we have a few different sort of training product ideas in different categories. And my question for you all is, you know, in terms of the ones that are most interest to you, could you prioritize them? You know, you just hit the drop-down menu and you click 1 or 2 or 3 in the matter of priority. So this brings us to the end. You can answer the survey, you know, now, or, you know, you could take it with you, but we ask you to please definitely answer the survey. It would really help us out in trying to determine what kind of training to develop. So now, if you have any questions for us, yeah, we'd love to answer any questions that you have of our unit. And since Becky Monroe is here, she can answer any questions about, like, California versus hate. So yeah, are there any questions? Yes.
I was looking at your list of who all you partner with, and I'm wondering, do you at this time, or are there plans to partner also with the Department of Homeland Security? Because I know they have some sub-committees that are doing some of the same things, and so I was trying to find out. I'm one of these people that I hate to reinvent the wheel, but I love collaboration, mm-hmm. and I love partnership. But sometimes the magic works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I'm curious,
yeah.
as to as an agency, now if you work with groups like Department of Homeland Security, because they are being brought in on some of the hate acts that are going on.
Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about, and he's one of my neighbors that we've had coffee before, and he's a partner with Orange County Human Relations, right?
He's part of our hate group.
Remind me his name, Norma?
Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, yes.
Oh, yes.
So,
I don't know
yes,
Michael.
Yes,
no,
I
I'm coming from a different direction, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, okay. But, so, they're a federal agency,
mm-hmm.
and as I mentioned before, we can work with local city, county, state, and federal agencies. We all create force multipliers in the work. At the federal level, you have the Community Relations Service at the U.S. Department of Justice. So, you know, Homeland Security is aware of that. At the federal level, there already is something as well. So we can all work together on different issues. It's just going to depend on the issue that occurs. And I know that Homeland Security also has, like, grants. So they have a different angle as well. But, you know, we can work together, figure things out, see where we overlap, and if we need to divide and conquer, we can. So, yeah.
And we absolutely, I mean, I, because right before I came to the state, I was working for the administration again, but from here. And so we are still in pretty close contact with a lot of the federal agencies. And I think, you know, what always drives it is, of course, what the community is comfortable with and what they want. So part of it is, you know, making sure, you know, whatever the purpose of that agency is in that moment.
Right.
So I know, like Marquez was saying, DHS has some great security grants that can be useful for houses of worship as well as for some NGOs, and that's great. Other times, some communities just aren't comfortable going into a meeting with DHS,
yep.
and we want to be aware of that and cognizant of that, and the fact that they're comfortable coming to us, we would never put someone in a position where they don't feel that way. So I think it's a great question, and you're right. We're also trying to do better about within the state. I mean, you know, when I was saying we're working with CDSS, the California Department of Social Services, you know, for a while, people were like, well, that's Stop the Hate. You guys are ending hate. Wait, how is all this working together? And I think you're right. We have to figure out a better, because at the end of the day, when someone's targeted for hate, they don't really care where you're coming from. They just want to get done.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes?
Actually, I'm curious, because last year, Attorney General Bonta, I think he came to us many times, actually, or interaction with him. And I'm curious, like, what is your interaction with their department?
I work with Kat a lot.
Oh,
so
okay.
Kat, who works for Attorney General on hate crimes issues anyway, and certainly actually Damon Brown as well, who's now been appointed by the Attorney General. So we're working very closely with them. What's interesting is, you know, in terms of responding to individual acts of hate and like, getting civil claims, we probably are, you know, they kind of send people to us because we can provide more of the individual support. Again, not we crew, to be careful, but we, the Civil Rights Department and California versus Hate. But yeah, we were actually just, I just did a webinar with the Attorney General and his staff on sort of, again, how do we work better together? Because you're right, and it's been so exciting, too, to have an Attorney General who's been out that outspoken about these issues. And so he has been, his staff has been incredible about making sure we're all on the same page. So.
That's great. And then I have a second question.
Good.
In regards to nonprofit, because you had a huge list, which I was really glad to see that you guys are engaging so many. But in terms of nonprofit, how would you recommend them to sort of be better partners, or how do you engage you guys better?
That's a great. I think it. You know, I'm going to sound like a lawyer. It depends, but I think I would say on the hate work, one of the things is, look, I'll pretty brief about this, but in terms of combating hate, one of the things we know is that we, as much as I can tell people I'm not police, I'm not criminal law enforcement, I am civil, I am still the state, I am still the government, and I have not earned that trust. So part of what we have asked, and we're partnering with community-based organizations to do, is if they are comfortable to be that bridge, to be the one, if people feel safe going to them, my obligation is to serve the needs of that community-based organization, because I've got to earn their trust. I was talking to some people who are leading a tribal organization, and they said, you still got to prove more to us. I'm not gonna vouch for you until you show that we can do that. And so that's my obligation. So I think in terms of NGOs, I think we'd love for people to reach out to us if they have resources that they want to offer. The other thing I'm trying to be very cognizant of is the state sometimes will say, we're so grateful for these CBOs, and here's 12,000 new cases for you guys to handle, so this is great. So we're also trying to make sure we're actually compensating people for their time. We're entering into small contracts to do that kind of work. But what I would say is just, if you come to us and tell us what you need, and like, you know, how can we actually, and that's another thing I should be careful about. We should tell you the kinds of things we might be able to offer. So I do think the onus is on us. I guess I would just ask if people be open to sort of responding. The other thing I will say that I think is great about Orange County in terms of the reporting that you're doing in terms of hate crimes, as, you know, when you said the 4 versus 80, one of the things that I also think is if hate crimes numbers are going up, we know they're going up because of an increase in hate, acts of violence, there's also, that means that there's growing trust. Mm-hmm. So as a CDO or as an NGO, it's so important to tell the mayor, tell the city manager, tell the police chief, we think it's okay that the numbers are going up. That means to us that people feel safe coming to you. This has been an issue with the transition in terms of how we're counting hate crimes data. I get it. If you're the mayor, do you want to be the mayor that sees the biggest increase in hate crimes?
Probably not, except that actually means that you are seeing the biggest increase in people trusting you mm-hmm. to report that information. So I guess that would be the other thing that's CDS on top of that.
Yeah. And remember that on the crew side, on
yeah.
the community conflict resolution unit, you know, a nonprofit can call us if they want technical assistance, they want a partner that has experience in working with community groups and trying to design a process to engage the community. Sometimes the best people to engage communities in conversations that, you know, are uncomfortable or unsafe when they want to talk about policing, for example, is not to have the city hosted or the police department hosted, but nonprofits. And so we can work with a nonprofit to help them design a process so that that nonprofit can engage the community and do most of the work. We're more of like the behind-the-scenes technical assistance, assisting body that can provide that help.
It's all free of charge.
Yes.
Was that on there?
I hope that. Yeah. So it we are free. So your tax dollars have already paid for the
yeah.
services. Yes.
Including for NGOs.
Mm-hmm. Any
Amy?
Other questions?
Amy.
Oh, I just wanted to appreciate the point about like when the numbers are going up to
mm-hmm.
recognize that also. Could be evidence of increasing trust. Like, it's been a pretty significant investment here in terms of our infrastructure to be able to report in different languages
yeah.
and to support local nonprofits too in facilitating the reporting and to kind of get rid of some of the government, not
yeah.
get rid of the government, I represented the government for a long time, but
mm-hmm.
to provide other means by which we're interacting and not only through government. But so I appreciate your point because I think sometimes like when we see numbers going up, it's breathtaking and scary and tragic and also enlightening in that we're finally being able to talk to people.
We're finally being able to talk to people and people finally think we're listening.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
for so many years when we had agencies reporting zero hate crimes and you were living in a community
right.
and you knew you were confronted with hate every day or you knew that your family member was and nothing, that sends a really clear message about who's there for you and who's not. So I think you're absolutely right. It sends a message. We're listening, and that we are aware of the reality of the people, and we still have a sliver of it, right? We know it's underreported,
definitely.
But at least we're getting an opening. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for
yes,
coming
absolutely.
Out. Oh, go ahead.
Have you been able to connect with the colleges and universities in Orange County and done presentations yet?
We have not yet, and I would love to if you
yes.
This weekend.
Okay. Yeah, if you can help facilitate that.
That would
yeah.
be great.
Yeah.
We would love to do it, both from the perspective and also of the hate violence perspective. We also, our commission is also able to support research on hate, and so
mm-hmm.
I would love to see some of our...
do you all hear that?
Yeah. Hello?
Some of our, especially the state universities that are...
Commissioner
Rachel
and I both
at UCLA,
so. Ah, wonderful.
Perfect.
That's great.
This one last.
Yeah, I'm
curious. I just want to know your priorities. Like, what are you losing
yeah.
sleep on, for example?
What was that?
What are you losing sleep on? Like, what are your priorities?
Well, right now, infrastructure has been, you know, one of our biggest, since we are a brand new unit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming from an organization that was already built, you don't think about, you know, standard operating procedures. And, you know, when you don't have them and you're brand new, now all of a sudden, like, wow, we actually need those bureaucratic things that, you know, people always hate. So it really is amazing. We didn't have a website, so we had to think about, like, a website, the language, making sure that if we're going to tell people that we exist, there's a place for them to go. That QR code was a cool little thing that we were able to kind of work out so that we can have people go to the website. So a big priority is now outreach to try to make sure that people know that we exist. That QR code that I have on you, we want to know what we should develop in terms of training so that besides custom assistance, if you tell us, you know, what your problem is, yeah, we can try and figure out how we can help you. But we want to make sure that we develop little training products so that, you know, with your feedback in terms of, like, what are the biggest issues that we should focus in on, then we can think of, like, what are some additional tools that we can develop. But that outreach will be critical. So if there are groups that you think we should talk to, you know, please contact us, let us know, and we'll be sure to reach out to them. So if it's like the schools, the universities, if you can help to facilitate that, yeah, let us know. We'd love to. If you're part of an association, mm-hmm. if you're part of a network, you know, and you want to invite us to talk, please do so. You know, invite us, and we're happy to do that.
And I don't want to take your question too early, but I will tell you, I am losing sleep over, we have this opportunity, like when you were describing what we finally are doing as a county, we have, this is a moment where mm-hmm. we have attention, we have, and I just don't want to, we have to convert it into action and mm-hmm. to change. And so what I sometimes lose sleep about is, you know, thinking about how do we engage effectively with the news. Like, I was listening to the description about sort of the policy around the chair being able to speak out when there's an act of hate. We've been talking about that at the statewide commission. How do we think about that? How do we make sure that that counts? Like you said, it matters when people speak out. How do I also make sure that when I speak out, I am not feeding, you know, there's also another narrative that's trying to divide us. And so I right now just, I want to make sure that this statewide resource line and network does what we say it will do, which is really be community-centered and community-driven. And so to Marquez's point, we are asking people to look at what we got now and tell us what's wrong. Because mm-hmm. we can't lose this chance. I don't know when it's going to come again. And I think it's this opportunity, but it's also nobody in this room needs to be reminded of the sense of urgency we have right now with respect to white nationalism and white supremacy in this country. So I think that might be more than what you were asking for.
No, really. I acknowledge the momentum, because that's how I feel as well. There's this momentum that we need to capture. And for me, it's like the timeline in my brain is like the next 2 years.
And to your point, I'm so glad to hear your enthusiasm mm-hmm. and dedication, all of you, behind that. Because just this past week, I heard someone say, Orange County was not designed for equality or equity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I thought, at first, I wanted to kind of resent it. And then I thought about some of the hate acts and some of the things, some of the different groups that are being assaulted, including the homeless, which I've just been working with. I also work with human trafficking and that type of thing. And all of a sudden, that statement came in a little bit brighter than I liked, but it came with a lot of truth, I realized.
I think it's the words that you read from the systemic,
mm-hmm.
it's a long way to go. But I think to your point, we've got the momentum. This is the time.
Yeah.
So, and it's, I will say, as an Orange County resident, I'm really glad y'all are here.
Well, we had a hand over there.
Yeah.
Norma, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
In the event that, I want to make sure I understand, I came from a state agency, so I think this is fascinating that
mm-hmm.
you're able to mediate. My only question is, if you have two parties that you're mediating for, one of them, let's say, is actually violating the law, you're a mediator, but ultimately the state would bring action against that party if mediation wasn't settled. Is that correct? So you would be working with someone who...
So I think it's... So it's an excellent question, because
mm-hmm.
we have... we have an entire unit that is the kind of dispute resolution division within CRD that does the cases where there are actually people are bringing complaints. So if someone is bringing an individual complaint and they are bringing it, you know, under Ralph Act, under any of our sort of jurisdiction, that is not CRU. So CRU will come in for community mediation, meaning it's when a large community is affected. So we've done things like, you know, I've seen Marquez in action in many of these situations where there's a larger sort of community tension, and it's kind of like he was describing. How do you have an effective town hall meeting? I'm sure everyone in this room has seen not effective town hall meetings or community meetings. How do you do that? So it's more that if someone has an individual claim, they would. I'm pointing to Greg because he had all the big litigation that would come out of those if they weren't individuals, but they would still go to the civil rights department.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great question. We are still, part of our mandate is to let people know who we are and who we're not, and that's a great question. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, and even if litigation came out of a community dispute, we're separate from the enforcement. So even if somebody filed a DFPH complaint, the legal department and the enforcement division could handle it, and we would just stay separate from it.
Okay. Thank you.
And there is a model for it, Department of Justice, where we used to be. I've worked on both sides of that, right? I was in the Civil Rights Division where we did the prosecutions and the Community Relations Service, so it can be done, and we have a model for it, so that's good.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't realize that I had my own tag. It's over here.
You can't hear the problem with
muscle.
Okay, discuss communications standing committee responsibilities and additional members.
And Commissioner Leach has volunteered to speak on this.
I have volunteered to speak only out of self-preservation. Some of you may recall discussing a communications committee to take care of not only the statements that we have been trying to put out there, but also, in a sense, to help with any education endeavors or public awareness endeavors, not unlike a little bit of what we were just talking about, how we need to raise our presence in different communities and that type of thing. But the way it came out in the bylaws was that the communications committee would be a standing committee, as opposed to ad hoc, which was its status previously. And at that time, our former colleague Farid was very much heading this up, and he simply said to me, "Dot, with your communications background, would you just help me out here?" And I said, "Certainly." Well, as we know, Fareed will not be returning, and Dot finds herself as the solo member of this committee. But in reviewing the bylaws and in talking with both Joanne and with Norma, I feel like that, at least for me, there was some information, vital information, that was omitted as we discussed it. And by becoming a standing committee, it forces it into a public committee that we would have to post and, you know, that type of thing. While there is nothing that I can imagine that would be secret from the public, it is a work session. And so depending on what the topic is, whether it be a unity statement or whether it be devising ways to help raise our public awareness or our educational endeavors, how we can, I'm not sure the public needs to be there. And it kind of just throws a burden on whomever will be chairing this and involved in the program. So what I am coming to the commission with today is it is my understanding that nothing pertaining to the work the committee might do would change. So I would like to ask that next month we have it on the agenda to strike the communications committee as being a standing committee and return it to an ad hoc status. Now, it is my understanding from Norma that the thing about the communications committee is that it is, has a sunset. Well,
an ad hoc.
And as I'm sorry, as an ad hoc, yes, thank you. As an ad hoc, it has a sunset. I was speaking to someone the other day, and they said it could be 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. It could be a year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about the fine details like that, but it is just something that I would like to see return to the ad hoc status. And then members and a chair be appointed or volunteer, and we're able then to vote on it at next month's meeting.
Is there a limit then of it being, like, it can only be up to a year? Or could it be, like,
there
I mean, just to make...
For an ad hoc,
mm-hmm.
there isn't necessarily a... timestamp,
mm-hmm.
but it can't go on for. We can't have an ad hoc serve for even a year. Sounds like a lot.
That's probably
but
edge.
I think that
yeah.
that would be your limit. Anything that goes beyond a year seems like there's more business than usual. What I can think of, for example, was years ago. Some of us were here. Free launched these listening sessions and partnered with OCDE, and we had several of those. And it started, we started, I think, somewhere like in February and ended in November. And that was it. So that's a whole year for this ad hoc to meet and plan those sessions. And I think something like that stands. And then, you know, it sunsets, and if something else surges, another project surges, then there will be a new ad hoc form with new members. But if it's the same, I think if it goes in perpetuity, and they're doing the same thing over a year, then we run the risk that, oh, well, why isn't this a standing committee rather than an ad hoc?
Well, and the possibility crossed my mind as well, that if we did this on... a quarterly basis. Because we go dark in July now and we go dark in December, we would have a September, October, November 3 month period, and then we've got the March, April, May, June. And if we could have the 2 other months just to bring the committee together, I mean, next month is already February. So we're really starting to, you know, kind of butt up against a wall a little bit if we don't have some understanding of what it might be that we could sunset it after a 2 month and then after a 3 month period and then pick up again August, September, October. If, I don't know, James, I mean, do you have any insight on that?
Darwin, you're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. The one thing I'd make a comment on, I'm not counsel, but in counsel advice in the past, it has generally said that an ad hoc should be for a defined scope and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a reoccurring ad hoc of the same topic, for instance, communication for a quarter, then a quarter again, that would likely be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of an ad hoc would be if you had an issue that's unique, a one-time scope to develop that. For instance, the bylaw ad hoc. The next issue comes up, you have another ad hoc. But if it is reoccurring, even if it's the same topic with different members, I think that might be an issue with being more of a standing committee.
Can we define what the communication is?
So I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was going to follow that up with, in our bylaws, there isn't a description
as
to
no
about what this communications committee is tasked to do. And I think it was framed that way because there was certain interest in different pots, and we all felt like, oh, well, everything can go into this communications committee. So there's no defined scope, which I think, in my personal opinion, it's even challenging to say that we have a standing communications committee when there really isn't a clear pathway or role for them. With the ad hocs, I think it's flexible in there's something that happens in the community, there's, you know, something that we feel a crisis hits and the commission feels like it needs to have a certain action, then the com- the commission acts, right? But at this point, if the communications committee stands and there's no changes, it's going to be up to the members of that committee to determine what they're working on.
Well, part of the situation is time. For instance, we were running into the problem that when a crisis occurred, the way it was written, it said we had to come back and get approval from the commission and before we could send out a statement of unity. So your time is gone. The heart and soul of your message is gone. So that was part of what we were talking about in the communications. But as Rabbi Rick was reminding me the other day in a phone conversation, that, you know, besides just the statements, that there are ways that a communications committee could get word out to, whether it be through schools or, you know, organizations or whatever, that, you know, for instance, if programs begin again, that the communications committee would be helpful in getting the word out, distributing anything that might need to be done. Same way with any public awareness type of things. So that our presence is known within the community. And as I said to him, I would hope that as our presence grows, that so does the trust factor we were just talking about here. And then so will the numbers of reporting, because they know there's a safe zone to come to in the form of this commission. But to your point, Norma, you know.
Yeah, so the answer is there isn't a scope for it.
And I think there should be a scope, because exactly what you're saying, Commissioner Leach, like, we can't agendize when there's going to be an incident and therefore come up with a timely statement where we notify the public in advance because of Brown Act, right? So, like, how do we stay nimble and stay within the bylaws and the structure? So,
you know, I will say this. So, my recollection of the creation or the conversation on the creation of this committee came from the need to be able to respond and put out statements in a timely manner.
Yeah, right.
I feel that there's already a bylaw change now that allows the commission to do that. And I mean, Commissioner Leach and Sandberg already worked on that. It's giving the power to the chairperson to be able to issue that within the scope that, you know, falls within the mission. I feel that that concern is addressed there, because even in the last two times that that the commission issued, it was done in a time, it was within 3 days or 4 days of the incident, which has never happened before. So I feel that that's how the conversation about this committee came up, and having responded under the new provision, I felt, oh, this is timely. This is within that scope. We're right on target with other organizations issuing statements too. So that's where I remember the conversation came from.
That's my recollection.
And so then I'm just wondering this to our chair. Like, it sounds then like this falls on you in terms of the statement. And so I guess I just want to, like, make sure that you're supported and that you're well-resourced, so that way if there's, you know, we can't predict when there's going to be a need for statements, right? And so we can't put that on a timeline. And so I just want to make sure that as a chair that you feel supported and that you feel like you have resources. And because I know during one of the statements that I helped with too, like, it came up, like, how many people can be involved with it because of Brown Act. And so it's more than just like drafting something. And so I think that's my biggest concern, is just making sure. I think the infrastructure is there with the bylaws change, and I just want to make sure Chair Masuba, that you're supportive and well-resourced.
No, I think it would be very supportive of the chair. I think the way we readjusted the terminology and the verbiage on the other bylaw, but I think maybe this is why it came up as a communications committee rather than an ad hoc, when you're saying that, you know, you suggested doing quarterly or what, but it can't really be structured in that way. So I think that's probably how it came up as a committee, and then all the rest was not really, you know, we weren't really informed what that was really going to involve, you know, so being a public meeting and all that. So I think there is the need for some type, you know, it's a tricky way of doing it. I think it would be best to be presented as an ad hoc, but how long can we hold on to that? That's enough, so.
There had also been discussion at some early on about there being somewhat of a template, and that that whether it be the chair or the executive director, but both would sign, and if one was unavailable, the other signature would hold and would be approved by commission. I don't know that there was some discussion at that time that was not as workable as we thought it seemed. It seemed like the right thing, but as with so many things, once it's viewed and another spotlight's put on it, it gets changed. But you know, to the point, I mean, Rabbi asked me the other day. He said, "Well, if." Our communications committee is a standing committee and open to the public. Does that mean the executive committee is also? Not my business.
It actually includes like what, the previous chair?
Yeah.
And
so
the past
it's a past. So it's the chair, the vice chair, and the past chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was, well, that came from handing off knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So right now, we would have to phone Joe. Let's do it to say that we have to. But in the event next year, right,
mm-hmm.
in the new elections, Commissioner Matsuba wouldn't be able to be a chair anymore. It's a new chair would come in. It's to the benefit of the new chair coming in.
Right.
It's mostly just kind of hand off knowledge or process, or if there's a project that the chairperson is working on halfway through, someone's going to pick up. It's more of that mentoring piece, from my understanding, in adding that piece there.
Mm-hmm.
I think for that, if I remember correctly, that standing committee only meets twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to go back to the template piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then the support. So, commission staff or myself are there to support the chairperson in helping draft the statement, do the research, etc. There is a template per se that I use, because there's a section where it has to talk about who we are or what this commission is, right? And saying, I think there was another piece around, if you've been victimized or you know someone, here's a phone number, here's the website. So there is a template per se that we use. It's challenged to put a template around the actual issue that is being called out, right? Because they're all different. But I feel that when we're looking at this article around allowing the chairperson to issue statements, it's when there's a significant occurrence of hate, of a hate crime or a hate incident, national or local. The last two statements that were issued were pretty major.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, we can't agendize when these happen. I imagine some of them might happen within the same week that the commission is going to be meeting.
Right. Or the day after.
Or the day after. I feel that in terms of that piece, this bylaw change assists in being timely. I think the concept of outreach, the concept of connecting with community, we're going to have to look at through a different lens than statements or communication. And those give themselves for ad hoc formation, right? Forming an ad hoc to say, oh, we're going to do a specific outreach event for X, Y, and Z. Or we want to do some workshops, maybe with the help of our new friends here, around what does the community do to respond to a hate incident? And we're going to hold that. So I think that those can become specific because they do have a timeline, mm-hmm. I feel. Versus the statements, it's a little challenging too.
Yeah.
And that would be specific and then dealt with, and that
right.
app would be closed or
right.
ended, and then if something else, we would possibly
right.
need to form another ad hoc to deal with some a different issue. Mm-hmm. I could see that flowing a lot better.
So I guess there was a proposal here.
If someone would move and second
the
proposal,
we can't. No, we're not.
It's not on the agenda.
Just to agendize it, yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm
sure. This does open another situation, right? Because that means that an additional change that we're that the commission is proposing to the bylaws. So, from my understanding, and James and Ted can correct me if I'm wrong, the commission, because it's so straightforward, the commission can, or the chairperson can direct the staff to be able to make the change and then bring it back for discussion and review at the next meeting with the rest of the changes as well.
Okay.
So then there's three items that need to be corrected or edited. No, two. Sorry. There's two more items that need to be edited for the bylaws, the
term
limits, and then striking out the executive communications committee. Next month, the commission will be voting on three, which is the language around hate incidents, hate crimes for statements, and the last one I mentioned.
Sounds good. Yeah.
All right.
Move forward with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And thank you, Doc, for bringing that on. Thank you. All right, we're moving to number 8.
Hate Commission staff reports, introduction of new County of Orange support staff, and Hate Hurts Us All, 3 months report.
All right, so I've been referring to them throughout the meeting, so some of you are like, what are they? I have the pleasure and privilege to introduce the commission to our new county staff liaisons through the contract. So we have James Dimwitty and Ted Knapp. Renee and Jenna were our liaisons, but that was temporary. As they transitioned and we got a new building, the commission kind of came back to the county executive office. So moving forward, Ted and James are new Jenna and Renee. I actually have had the pleasure of working with them both in the past. James, when he was a District 5 with Supervisor Bartlett, and then Ted has been our county liaison for what was the expansion grant last year. And I mean, working with them was a pleasure, and I think I kind of gave so many, ranted and raved so much, they're like, okay, fine, we'll give them to you permanently. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knew who they were, they'll be here to answer the questions or work with us through any of questions that require more of the county savvy and knowledge. So here they are. Anything you'd like to say?
Just thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to support departments, you guys, and supporting Norm and the team and the commission here. I'm proud to be with the county family, not quite 10 years, but I love it here, and I'm looking forward to the new opportunity to support you guys.
I think I've seen all of you on the Zoom meetings, but glad to see you all in person. Love working with Norma and her team, so I'll look forward to continuing it. So thank you.
Thank you. Ricky, you said that
we're
part of the county executive office. Does that mean we're not part of the community services?
So the umbrella is OCCR, right?
We're part of OCCR admin. So right. It went from a program specific to more of the general OCCR community resources in general.
Okay, so no joint.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so my number two.
Oh, I'm sorry, you did it.
So I'm going to do a quick overview of this report, because there is the final report for the Hate Crimes Assault campaign that we should be seeing by the end of this month. So it'll have a more comprehensive view of the impact of the funding that we received to improve our database, to partner with 211, to do the targeted marketing, social media, paid media, and then also the impact of working with CBOs and improving the way that victims of hate get connected to resources, specifically when there's a language or cultural barriers. So I'll share this with the clerk of the board, will become, and I'll send it out to you all. But one of the things that I wanted to share is, I think within the first 3 months, and that's what this report is from July through September, we quickly saw an increase of hate reports come through the 211 portal. And I think back to some of what the conversation around the increase of hate, I feel that there's a combination here of, there's an increase of people knowing where to go. There's now the accessibility to be able to report. And not only that, but know that you can get help. Right, it's not just about reporting, but there's some type of support that comes with that call. I feel that that's been a driver. But also there is an increase in hate activity. If you press your ears on the ground, we know that there's a whole movement on really perpetuating the message of hate through all these different channels that sometimes we don't hear about, or that we're not privy to, specifically targeting teens and youth. So we know that message is out there, and it's really kind of opening the doors for people to act out on those bias motivated behaviors that otherwise, if they're not button wasn't pressed, they wouldn't. So I have some data around perpetrator demographics that in the past we really haven't been able to get, because it's not something that is freely shared sometimes. But through this reporting portal, we've been able to collect some, not significant, but enough for us to be able to share information. So from June through August, I have a problem because my document is black and white, and colors are associated to this graph.
Oh.
So,
oh.
I can't tell you. Let me bring it up, because otherwise, okay. So while we wait for that Let's see. So in the first 3 months, we saw a number of 84 referrals being made. And mind you that June, we didn't start till the middle of the month. So practically it was like in 2 months' time, we went to from, you know, receiving maybe 2, 3, 4 reports to 84 referrals being sent out. Mm-hmm. One of the most active organizations that received or received more of the referrals were Waymakers. And they, if you know anything about them, they do a lot of mediation, but they have a lot of robust mental health services platform. Us as the Human Relations Commission, being able to support and do some of the navigating and reporting, and then the Green Foundation, which is one of the smaller CBOs that we partner with that really focuses on the African American community in Orange County and kind of health disparities. So that was really exciting to see, because we know that's been a trend of the African American and Black community being among the top hate crime victims here in Orange County, even though there's such a small percentage of our population. So in terms of data collected, data was collected based on the number of calls. 211 had 2 call representatives daily and weekly. We had, from June to August, we had one representative had a total of 2,000 inbound and outbound calls. And then the other was 4. So in total, we had 24. A little bit over 2,400 inbound and outbound calls that we received under this. Some of them were, you know, some of them were actual reports. Some of them were more of, we need a referral, of that sort.
Okay.
So I think that's a blessing and a curse when in here, because a lot of folks know 211. As a resource line. So I think our outreach in promoting the 211 dial-in or form, some folks felt that it was, oh, this is just to get connected to 211, and there wasn't an actual hate incident attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that was pretty surprising to us was that we had 0 incidents reported through the mobile platform. So we didn't get any texts, at least in the first 3 months. It'll be interesting to see what that looks like the year as a whole. Gosh.
Are you at a place where I could ask you a question?
Yeah.
you made a reference just a minute ago, kind of a passing about teenagers and that type of thing. From the information I'm reading and have available to me, and anyway, you may have more information on this than I do through the university or whatever, the growing number of hate crimes and incidents involving trans teens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I am wondering if there is a time under either the Hate Hurts Us All banner or just anything we have on our agenda where we might have a speaker from the LGBTQ center
mm-hmm.
come in and better educate us and acquaint us with how bad the situation is. I'm looking back there and seeing our friend Allie and remembering that some years ago she and I were both at a school board meeting CAPO school board, where the issue was that a middle school in Aliso Viejo had formed a gay straight alliance club. And it was approved by the principal. I think it had been going something like almost 2 years, as I recall, Allie. You may have a different remembrance of it.
Right.
But the point was, some child went with a friend to the meet and went home and told his or her parents. And the parents went ballistic and called every anti-LGBTQ group that they could and said, show up at the next school board meeting and whatever. I was contacted because of my interfaith connections. And we sent out a letter. We had bishops, we had imams, we had rabbis, you know, all on the letter. But my friend down here, Allie, was there in person, and we had different, probably 60 people, I think, were lined up to speak. It did not turn into the chaos that they were anticipating. But it was the first time, one of the board members told me it was the first time that the CAPO board had voted unanimously in favor of the kids in years, which I'm not sure what that says about the board, but the point is, we know this is a growing specific problem, and I think we would do ourselves a huge favor if we would learn more about it, and so I'm wondering if we can plan on, in some of the coming months, having a representative come and speak to us and allow us to hear what is going on.
Well, that might be a good place for one of our community meetings to hold it at the center. I know.
And the LGBTQ Center of OC was also part of, well, they've been part of the Hate Crime Prevention Network for years, but they were also one of our CBOs. So we definitely do have that connection. And there's other also LGBTQ serving orgs in Orange County.
Yeah,
I just think it's timely right now.
With that, so I have victim demographics. Almost twice as many victims are female than male. 55% of victims are aged 40 or older. So most also identified as white and Caucasian, followed by Asian, Pacific Islander, Hispanic, Latino. So we'll have, you know, the new report will have a full picture of that, which is interesting to me. Most perpetrators were over the age of 25, and 37% were over the age of 40. 39% of perpetrators were reported to be white Caucasian, and 61% were stated to be male. And then where the perpetrator was a male, almost half of them were at least somewhat motivated by race. So that's
just... Do you know how many might have been armed?
Not by the report.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that those, if there were specific key grounds, that would come in a
different.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I kind of wanted to just share a little bit of that. And the thing is, this report, it took a while to put together, just the pieces. So I felt like if I wouldn't go through all the entire of it, because we do have the entire report for the whole 8 months coming out at the end of the month. So I said, well, maybe we should just look at that. But I think overall, just looking at some of the numbers in terms of the monthly reports, just seeing the trend of the amount that are coming in through the new database. And then also just seeing the amount of traffic that we've gotten on our website, the report form, through the different outreach opportunities within Penta. It was a really successful campaign, and we're continuing to work through that, finding ways to continue to push the message and keep some of this momentum going.
Great.
problem to you.
Staff was incredible. And that's it. That's all my report.
Thank you.
It's just good, as we were saying before, to see how people are starting to feel safe with being able to report. I mean, we hate to see the numbers go up, but it means they're willing, you know, to accept that they can trust people to report it. So. Okay, so Interfaith Council, that would be Rabbi Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And then nine, I think, is the leader. And any of the announcements from commissioners?
Well, actually, I'll just say. So Lunar New Year is coming up. A lot of our Asian American communities will celebrate that. And next time we meet, I think we're going to be past. So I just want to acknowledge that. And I hope that you guys go out and just have fun, join all the parties and celebrations. It's going to be great, actually.
Yeah. And another thing,
I was
just going to say, even though I sent it out, but I don't know if everybody saw it, that Jennifer was one of Orange County's 175 most influential people. And just keep on doing what you're doing. You're doing so many amazing things in our community, so that's just fabulous. And what party are you guys having at the center? I might swing by.
Okay. I'm having a ton. I'm not kidding you.
Okay.
I feel like becoming a vet.
All right.
Okay, so I think we're officially
adjourned.
Yeah.
Woo! We made it.
I'm really glad we kicked off this conversation.